Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Welcome to episode 110 of McChesney on Chain, coming to you down here from 60 Football Academy in Parker at 10470 South Progress Way. This place kicks ass. We've been in here since 5 a.m. grinding. The film room has been rolling. We're going to be posting a bunch of stuff at 60 Academy on Twitter and Instagram about the lab and the progress and yada, yada, yada. We'll be talking about some of the kids that have committed to the University of Colorado later in the show. And when we talk about the bus and them wrapping up the spring up there in Boulder and the schedule upcoming, which the schedule's down the road until like 2040 or dope. I just hope I make it to 2040 at this point. Like I said, this is episode 110 of McChesney Unchained. That's 110 episodes. That's crazy. And thank you so much to DNVR for all that they do. Remember, you can go to dnvr.com and check out everything they do down there at the sports bar in the studio. But like I said, we are on Zoom today. The great Mark Schlereth joins us today. And Stink and I are going to talk about, you know, the Broncos not going to OTAs or not going to the workouts until OTAs. And then the veterans not going at all. And there's some major beef and strife between the guys in the NFL who have bread and security and the guys in the NFL who are trying to earn it every day. And it, your mind changes once you get the bread. So we're going to talk about that. I heard about a lot about it this morning on 104.3 listening to him. And we're definitely diving into that full speed. But I wanted to start the show off today talking to you about our good friends at DraftKings, like we always do. DraftKings sponsors McChesney Unchained at DNVR. And I've actually been killing it lately. I'm not going to lie. I won a 14 parlay on Division One AA football the other day, which some would view as degenerate gambling. But if you win, I view it as winning. So let's just be real. Mavistal and Usman put on a show the last time they stepped into the octagon. Round two is sure to be something that packs a punch. DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC, is putting you in the center of this weekend's title fight with 26-1 odds on either title contender to reign victorious. Pick either the main event to win during this weekend's fight, 261 UFC, and DraftKings Sportsbook will give you 26-1 odds. Just bet $5 on either fighter to win, and you'll be able to cash $126 on a $1 bet. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than put your money where your mouth is with DraftKings Sportsbook. Don't worry if MMA isn't your bag. DraftKings Sportsbook offers great odds and promotions on basketball, hockey, and so much more. Like I said, Division One, AA football, North Dakota State, Northern Arizona. You're my dogs. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at convenience. Download the upgraded DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code DNVR when you sign up and turn $5 into $130 or $1 into $126 in free bets, and the title contender of your choice wins. Place your bet and watch the fist fly this weekend. That code is DNVR. It's for a limited time only and at DraftKingsSportsbook.com. You must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Do you have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. 110 rolls of McChesney Unchained here on DNVR. Remember, like I said, you can get everything at 60 Academy on Twitter and Instagram. And then also at DNVR Unchained on Twitter as well. We'll give you direct access to the show and some sports opinions and whatnot. And I'll be throwing up some gambling stuff as we go. I can't wait for football season to pop off again so I can make some more money. I mean, it's like the McChesney Sportsbook around this son of a bitch. Like I said, Mark Schlereth is going to join us later in the show to talk about the Broncos and whatnot. But I wanted to start off the show today with the Unchained rant. So, Jamal Murray going down, and I'm not going to spend a ton of time on the Nuggets, but shit, man, this is about as bad as it gets. And I can't sit here and complain about injury And I know that they were down against Golden State. Steph Curry scored 58 or whatever the fuck he did. And Jokic had a good game. But look, man, they were 0 for 12 in the second half from the three-point line. I understand the argument of why was he in the game. Well, he's in the game because you can score 8 points pretty quick in the NBA, and he's Jamal Murray. That's why he's a leader. So that argument's ridiculous to me, but I hear it. I'm just saying it's ridiculous. This is part of it. I'm not happy about it. That sucks. I hope he comes back at a blistering pace and healthy. The condensed schedule in the NBA and the back-to-backs is my fucking problem. You know, from a betting perspective, it's terrible because the numbers don't mean shit. NBA players can take a night off every night if they want to and still score 20. The competitive nature of the games is dropping because of the back-to-backs and the number of them, and the injuries are up. LeBron's hurt, AD's hurt, Jamal Murray's hurt now, and I think you're going to be looking at a playoffs where whoever's healthier is going to win, and this totally fucks Denver. I mean, this is bad. I will say this, though. This gives Michael Porter Jr. a really, really great opportunity to step in and be Jokic's sidekick, and gives other guys an opportunity to step up. I mean, it's going to increase minutes for everyone. Will Barton has got to start making layups when Jokic feeds him the rock the way he does. I mean, that guy kills me. Never shoot the ball, although now he's going to have to. I think this is bad, but I still think the Nuggets can win a first-round playoff series. I do, unless it's the Lakers, unless they get 4-5 against the Lakers. This is going – we're going to see the greatness of Nikola Jokic come to fruition even more right now, because he's going to take this as – this is my opportunity to go actually be the best player in basketball, even if he doesn't win the MVP, which I'm sure he won't, even though he deserves it, in my opinion. This is an opportunity for 15 to really go out and show what he is, even more so. And with Murray going off the floor, you know, I can sit here and bitch and moan about it, but we're going to see his true worth now, because if Denver somehow gets better, it may be an opportunity to maybe look at making a change down the road too. And what you thought was your original big two and Murray and Jokic, maybe that big two becomes Porter Jr. and Jokic. So this is going to be an opportunity for others to step up. And look, don't underestimate the importance of Aaron Gordon trading for that guy. He was the main guy in Orlando. He's out of there now. He's here for defense and all that kind of shit. But he's going to have to step it up too. And if you can get 18-20 from Aaron Gordon at good defense and rebounding, and Jokic doesn't have to do everything, and then Nikola's going to pick it up. I mean, and I can sit here and give you the Unchained rant about how shitty this is for Nikola, or shitty this is for Jamal Murray. But I think that the Nuggets are now in an opportunity to take out this animosity from losing one of their leaders and young studs in Jamal Murray on the rest of the NBA. So there's blood in the water in both directions, and we're going to see really what this team is fucking made of, man. Do they have a backbone? Are they going to go to work, and are they going to deal with the adversity, or is the adversity going to crush them? You can feel shitty for a day. I had a shitty day yesterday. I didn't come to work. I sat there and like felt bad for myself and shit. And this morning I woke up and I was like, fuck it, man, let's roll. And that's just the way the Nuggets have to be. Fuck it. It's like the dude says, fuck it. That's your answer for everything. So, yeah, that sucks. The Unchained rant is brought to you by our good friends and neighbors over here, Maven Hemp. And Jamal Murray's going to need some of that as he gets his recovery down from the muscle rubs to the tincture that I took this morning, 2,500 milligrams straight to the dome, to the CBD pills. It's fire. They have their shit together over there at Maven, from a post-workout ritual to pre-workout, just getting your body right and moving, especially for old guys like me, but even the young guys in here. The NFL players, they're all maximizing that product. We obviously have it in store here at 60 Football Academy, but they are literally our neighbors. They share a wall. They like the music. So I don't know about the people who moved here before, but these, they dig the fucking tunes I'm jamming every day. So that's great. It's a scientific innovation from Israel to Colorado that drives the process in creating this high quality hemp-based CBD product. And there's a lot of guys that obsess over ingredients in the product and what goes into it and so on and so forth. There's a rigorous third-party lab testing to ensure you're getting the best quality possible. And it's something that I take on the daily, and it's helped me a ton with anxiety and shoulder pain and back pain and, you know, arthritic pain and so on and so forth, and just overall pain. So go to mavenhemp.com and learn about the incredible CBD products and use the promo code 60SIXZERO. You'll get 10% off everything you buy. And I stand behind it, man. Maven and 60 Football Academy are moving forward to try and help these guys recover without some of the old school techniques, to say the least. So the Unchained Rant and Jamal Murray, they definitely are brought to you by our good friends at Maven. And 27 needs to get down here and get some of this muscle rub on that knee when he starts rehabbing it. So, all right, let's roll here. I want to get into some football stuff before we bring on Mark Schlereth to talk about the Denver Broncos and them not wanting to get involved in in-person activities at Dove Valley or UC Health or whatever they call that shit. Number one, Julian Edelman retires. He's not a Hall of Famer. I find it ridiculous that people think he is one. I mean, he's an NFL or Super Bowl MVP. He's got two rings. But if Rod Smith's not in the Hall of Fame as an undrafted receiver, and Edelman was a seventh rounder, he played quarterback at Kent State. He had an unbelievable career. He's a Ring of Famer probably in New England, although they got a lot of guys like that. You know, if he doesn't go to New England, he's another guy. He went to New England and filled the Wes Welker, Amendola role and so on and so forth, Troy Walters. And I think Edelman's a great pro. I think he's an awesome player. I love the way he plays. He's cutthroat on the field. He'll stick his nose in there and block people. He'll go across the middle. He'll take a hit and get up. He's smart. He's an ex-quarterback. He's a great player. He's not a Hall of Famer. And I find it ridiculous that people's criteria for the NFL Hall of Fame has fallen so far that Edelman's even considered. I find it disrespectful to his legacy to even bring him up in that fact, because then you have to kind of disrespect the guy to say he's not a Hall of Famer when he's an unbelievably good pro and great vet, but he never even made a Pro Bowl. So if he's never tasted pineapple before, he doesn't get to go to the Hall of Fame, man. Just saying. We had Alan Fanick on the show like three or four episodes ago, and that guy went to like 12 Pro Bowls or some shit, made six All-Pro teams or something ridiculous like that. That's the criteria for the Hall of Fame. So, Edelman, great career, bro. I think it's absolutely awesome that you played with one team the whole time, even though I despise that fucking franchise more than any NFL franchise, although I know they win for a reason, they're good and all that shit. But I'm a Jet, Dolphin, and Bronco. I don't know if you're gonna find three fan bases that hate them more than Buffalo. So I didn't play for them. I don't like them very much either. So that is what it is. Next. Okay, so lastly, Sean Payton is going to be portrayed by Kevin fucking James in a movie. Look, man, if I'm Sean Payton, I am so offended right now. Kevin James is a fat guy. Sean Payton isn't a fat guy. What the fuck? Who did this casting? Like, we can't get Aaron Eckhart or somebody, the dude that played Two-Face. He even looks like Sean Payton. He can't do it. Kevin James is going to play Sean Payton. And I was listening to Schlereth talk about this the other day on the Fan, actually, before we bring Mark on. And he texted Sean Payton and he was like, how do you feel about Kevin James playing you on TV? And he was like, you know, they could have gotten somebody like Matthew McConaughey or something. And Payton just wrote back like, you're the best. Ha ha ha. But I know deep down Coach Payton, who is probably super OCD, is like taking it to the heart. You think I look like that fucking guy? What? That's like trying to get David Spade to play me in a fucking movie, dog. That's the worst casting job fucking ever. It's terrible. Terrible. Can you see David Spade portraying me in a movie walking to the gym like, okay, guys, what is that, white mud? You're like, yeah, it's white mud. I'm the only one that found white mud. I know that's Farley, but he's there too. It just ain't gonna work. This movie is going to be, I don't even know what it's about, but Kevin James playing Sean Payton, not gonna work. So that's gonna be terrible. I give that shit two thumbs down. So episode 110 of McChesney Unchained rolls here. We are going to bring on Mark Schlereth now, and Mark and I are gonna talk about the Broncos and Drew Locke and shit like that, but specifically what I'm about to read you, because I'm not going to read it when he's on. We'll just get it out of the way now. So this is the statement the Broncos players released when they decided not to participate on Tuesday with the pre-work before OTAs. You know, the OTAs are still open, and I was in here with Quinn Bailey this morning. He was boxing, and he's still going to the facility. So this is truly voluntary, but it's going to be extremely difficult to get anything done if you don't go to the facility. Everybody's not just going to show up at a field and run it. You need coaches. So this is the statement from the Broncos brass. And when I say brass, I mean the top 15% of the roster, the guys who make all the money. This damn sure isn't the statement from the guys who want to fucking make the team and are fighting for jobs. That's for sure. Playing in the NFL is a dream of the players who work tirelessly year-round to perform in America's greatest game. With off-season programs starting in less than a week and without adequate protocols in place to use for us players to return safely, we will be exercising our right to not participate in voluntary, air quotes, off-season workouts. COVID-19 remains a serious threat to our families and our communities, and it makes no sense for us players to put ourselves at risk during this dead period. Talking about some college terms. Positivity rates in our city are at higher than they were at this time last year. Yeah, that's because at this time last year, it just started. Of course they were higher, and they're not even that high. Everything's opening back up. Just that's some hypocritical bullshit right there. Positivity rates in the city are higher at this time now than they were this time last year. We know players have been affected by club facilities, have been affected at club facilities around the NFL in recent weeks. Despite having a completely virtual offseason last year, the quality of play across the NFL was better than ever by most every measure. Horse shit it was. We hope players across the NFL work with our union as we did to get all the facts so every player can make an informed decision. So we're going to bring Mark Schlereth on now next on episode 110 of McChesney Unchained. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Schlereth. And Stink is going to give us his opinion on this this shit here. So let's get into this. Episode 110 rolls. Bringing on Mark Schlereth to talk about your Denver Broncos. And episode 110, which has me on Chain Rolls here, and it is my honor and pleasure to bring on Mr. Mark Schlereth, and Stink is going to join us here for the next 20, 25 minutes to talk about not only the Broncos not going to the offseason workouts and the reasoning behind it. He had a very strong opinion this morning on 104.3 The Fan, which you can catch him on every single morning. And we'll talk about Drew Locke and some other things Broncos concerning. And then as an ex-Jet, I'm going to talk to him about him flipping off the entire Gangrene Nation, which I thought was awesome. And I love football, and it's the only place you can get away with that kind of shit is if you're a football player or on a football field. It's incredible. So we'll talk about that a little bit too. But Mr. Mark Schlereth joins us here on episode 110, McChesney Unchained. Mark, what's happening, brother? Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Always good to catch up with you, Matt. I'm excited about being a part of it.
All right. So this morning I'm driving into the grind here, and we just got done with a 5 a.m. group, and I was driving back to make some edits for my boys and take them to school. And I was listening to you and Mike Evans talk about the Broncos veterans essentially putting this letter out. And I already read the letter to Unchained Nation here on DNBR. And it is what it is. You know what it says. I wanted to get your opinion as a multi-year vet in this game that was a 12th round draft pick or something like that. You had to
10th rounder,
fight and claw for everything you got, your three rings, your illustrious career. Everything was because you're a tough son of a bitch and you went to work every day. And I agree with you wholeheartedly, brother, that this is really, really selfish by the veterans. And I wanted to get your elaboration on that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because on its surface, when you read it, it just doesn't feel right. And I think you know, there's a lot of layers to what's going on in the NFL right now in regards to labor peace, in regards to the collective bargaining agreement, in regards to we as players, and you know this, and I'm part of it too, we've never had the balls to stand up to the owners and hurt them, right? So we get the little, like the movie A Braveheart, we grab the straps off a Longshanks table. Yep. Like, we fight for whatever we can get. And so there certainly feels like there's a part of this We're not coming in, you know, because we don't want to come into the voluntary stuff. And we've opened up Pandora's box last year, being able to get this done via Zoom. And you know, this is a veteran player. And you played a long time, you can do it on Zoom. If you're in the same system, you can. If you're a young football team, it really hurts the young guys. And if you're asking young guys to walk away from roster bonuses or walk away from workout bonuses, you know, if you're a fat cat that's making $18 million a year and you're saying don't go, that's a hard thing to do. That's not really what's going on here. Matt, you know, it's funny because I talk to organizations, teams. I've become, as I've worked for Fox, I've become very good friends. I consult for a couple of teams. I've become very good friends with many GMs and many head coaches around the league. And ultimately, I think one of the issues the Broncos face right now is you write, you know, a very eloquent statement. And the bottom line is you're trying not to hurt anybody's feelings. And the statement that you put out really, really shines a bad light on you as players.
Terrible.
And yeah, ultimately, here's the problem that the NFL is facing right now, and the teams are facing. The league doesn't want to have anything to do with setting protocol. So you're getting no leadership from Roger Goodell and the league. They're basically saying, hey, this is not our baby. This is your baby. Every state is an individual state with different protocols. So you guys put it together. So now the individual teams are not getting any, they're not getting any counsel, or they're not getting any, you know, standard protocol from the league. So they say, hey, we're opening up, you know, April 19th. We'll see you guys here. And the players are going, we don't know what's going on. Like, if we come in and have to spend an hour testing, and you know, we're not giving you another hour on top of the four that we're supposed to be here. We need some standards. And the teams are going, well, we haven't talked to the league about it. And so there's this roundabout kind of, you know, nobody knows what the other guy is doing. And from a player standpoint, and I understand this part, I want to know. I want to know what the protocol is. I want to have, and you know how it is as a player, man. You know, one of the things I love, one of the most satisfying things in the world about playing for 12 years is getting an itinerary every Monday, right?
I miss it.
Like, right. And you know, and you realize once you're done playing, you have to grow up and you've got to live without an itinerary. And that's really hard to do when every day of your life, you've been handed an itinerary and it says, hey, this is what I'm doing at 12. This is where And it's all set up for you. And you fold it up and you put it in your back pocket and you check it seven times a week, you know, because you know it. And right now, all the players are saying to the organizations is, listen, I'm not showing up here until you actually give me protocol. What's required of me? How much of my time is going to be spent? What does the testing look like? All these different things. And again, this is a lack of leadership from the league in general to each individual team. And ultimately, if I was counseling the players for the Broncos, you don't have to be contentious. All you have to say is we don't have a standard protocol from the league nor from the team. And when we get that standard protocol, we'll review it and then we'll make a decision. But until we get that, we can't effectively show up until we know what's going on. The league's principle or the league's thought process in this is, hey, just show up and we'll figure it out when we get there. Right? It's the problem with the Broncos running game. Just show up. We'll figure it out when we get there.
Yeah,
if you don't have an identity, if you have to scheme your running game every week, you know what you don't have?
A running game.
Right. So I love it. Like for me personally, I knew when I was a player, whether I was with the Skins or whether I was with Denver, second down and two, before they even called the play, I knew what we were running. Third down and one, I knew exactly what we were going to run. I understood what we were doing, and I called the plays, you know? I mean, that's the identity that we had. When you're just trying to figure out week in and week out, and you're trying to scheme a team based upon what they play – you don't have an identity. And then your players, How can you ever become good at anything when you don't have an identity? And that's all the players are really asking for. Tell us what we're getting into. Now, I don't think they word it very well. And I think it was terribly worded. Yeah. You're never going to win. You know this. You'll never win as a player because people look at you like you should just be thankful that you get paid a lot of money to play a game that we played for free when we were kids. And the point being is that if you're good enough to get paid to do something, you're not doing it for free. So shut up, because that's not happening.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. All right. So look, I think the identity problem starts with D'Amore Smith. And I think he's a puppet for the owners. And the owners being so chubby with the union president, who's supposed to be advocating for the players, is not really what I'm looking for as a member of the union. I'm sure you feel the same way. I wanted to get your take on D'Amore Smith and what you'd like to see from our union president. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, at what point do you think the players will actually stand up to the owners? I understand that not everybody has the money to sit out, but there's this thing, it's called the off season. And back in the day, like, players used to have jobs in the off season. And if you can humble yourself enough to like have another hustle, if you're a young guy, well, then maybe we might be able to strike and set the tone with the owners. And then I wanted to get your opinion on why they don't do it for real from a guaranteed money standpoint, but that'll be later in the show.
Okay. Well, I would say I've had several conversations with D. Smith. I sat on a plane with him before the last collective bargaining agreement. The 2011 collective bargaining agreement. I sat on a plane with him for 3 hours. Completely against the rookie wage scale. Thought it was the dumbest idea that I'd ever heard of. I mean, you think about it. You're a running back. Your career expectancy is like at 6 years, you're washed up.
Never going to get paid.
Right. They've got you for 5 years. I mean, come on. And you know, my whole point to Demoris is I used to go to this bar in Alaska called Chilkoot Charlie's. It was a real roughneck bar, right? And their motto was, where we cheat the other guy and pass the savings on to you. And I was like, D'Amore, if you think the owners are going to save millions of dollars on the rookies' wages and then pass it on to the veterans, you're just dumb. Like, that ain't going to happen. And, you know, it continued. Like, my whole premise on this was, you're going to continue to divide the haves from the have-nots. And I want some rookie to get paid through the nose. They can't play. You know why? Because when I've earned it as a 10th rounder, that's the starting point of my next contract negotiation.
Yep.
And so, you know, I just looked at some of the things that we did as a union and I shake my head. You know, I have had this conversation with D'Amore. You guys, you know, you guys are never organized enough to kick the owners in the nuts. I go, if you really want to hurt them, walk out before the playoffs. Say, here's the deal. Our contract is up in March. If we don't have a deal by November, we'll walk out of the playoffs and cost you billions of dollars. Billions. All our players have already been paid. We've already made the money. And so now what? The other thing that drives me crazy is, you know, I don't know much because I am ultimately I'm the mayor of Simpleton, right? I mean, I know football. There's a few things, right? I know how to work hard. I know physical labor. Like, that's the things I know. I know enough about history to, I believe that our independence was really created because of taxation without representation.
Yeah,
right?
I'm a history major, and that's correct.
Okay, good. Boston Tea Party and all that crap.
That was the strike point.
Okay, so I would say this. Why, as a players' union, are we paying an athlete tax in every state that we work in? How are we represented in Kansas City when we play for Denver? How are we represented? Why am I writing them a check for one, you know, whatever it is, one day out of however many that I play in Kansas City? We should go over there, shake hands, and refuse to play. because we're not being represented in the state of Missouri. Like, this doesn't happen for other, like, there's a lot of people that work, you know, that have a home base here in Colorado that do business other places that aren't taxed. They don't have an athlete's tax or a, hey, you're a salesperson tax. I don't understand why athletes get taxed and aren't represented in those states. I mean, you got it. You had to file 8 tax returns when you played. So I don't necessarily understand. And maybe I'm stupid. Maybe everybody has to do that. But you know, there's a reason they call it the athlete's tax. Like, why do we not have balls enough to say we're bringing in, over the course of that weekend, we're bringing $100 million into your state? That's not enough for you guys? Things that don't make sense to me.
So let's go full circle here. This morning, I'm listening to you on The Fan, and I text you. There's a rift in here about, I'd say, 3 weeks ago before Connor went back to New York. Connor and Jensen are both, you know, Ryan signed a 4-year, $57 million contract with Tampa, and it was incredible. And Connor signed a 3-year, $30 million deal with the Jets, and it was incredible. And then we've got Sam Jones in here and Quinn Bailey and Schlottman, and they're all getting down. And Sam got drafted and cut. He's in Indy now. And Quinn Bailey has been on and off the roster, and he's an undrafted guy from Arizona State, played with Sam. He's in here busting his ass. And Schlottman is, you know, an undrafted kid from TCU, and he started some games and been a good player for Denver. And I brought it up on purpose. Like, what do you guys think about the CBA and the way it was voted on and the way you guys came to this agreement? And the veterans and the strife there between the younger players. And then how are you guys going to vote on going back to work? And both the veterans who have bread and security, they don't even want to go until training camp. And it's not, I don't think they don't want to go until training camp because of COVID. I think they don't want to go until training camp because they're old. The young guys want to go to work now, and I can relate to that because that's the position I was in my whole career. If I don't go to work and get my reps, how are they going to see me as a future member of this football team? So I think there's legitimate strife between guys in the NFL who have a lot of bread and security and the guys who are trying to get it. And it's amazing to me to see it flip from getting it or wanting to get it to getting it and how the mindset changes. And again, it's the owners and the way it's set up. It's like they intentionally set it up this way so there would be strife and jealousy. So the union is never really secured as has synergy together, Mark. Like, there's always going to be. In 2011, brother, I watched them stand out in front of one NFL way there in Manhattan with Drew Brees and Tom Brady and Ray Lewis and all these, like, premier players in the NFL, and there was not one practice squad guy there in the negotiations to have a say. So do you think that they're intentionally dividing the players, and how long are they going to do it like this? I mean, when are the players going to actually come together? Until we're not a house divided as a players union, how are we ever going to attack 32 billionaires?
We're not. I mean, the bottom line is we're just not. They're smarter than we are. And they rely on the fact that you can say whatever you want, but the majority of guys in the National Football League are 3 paychecks away from financial disaster.
I was just like, yep.
Yeah. Just like every other American for the most part.
Yep.
And that's unfortunate. I know people don't want to hear that, but when you're a young player and you're making a fraction of what Von Miller is making, but you still try to live the lifestyle that Von Miller is living, right? You run out of money quickly.
Real quick.
And they know this. This is the other thing that I talked to the union about before the collective bargaining agreement. You realize you're going to create a class system. And it's happened. There's a 2-class system for the most part in the NFL. There are the haves and the have-nots. I call it the 80-20 rule, where 20% of the guys make 80% of the money. And the other 80% are fighting over 20% of the money. And what you end up doing is you pay these exorbitant amounts for your wide receiver, you know, your core position players, and then all your backup players, what you try to do is get by with a rookie and you pray. You get on bended knee and you pray that that guy never has to play because you know he can't play. But you keep him on your roster and you turn over your roster 35% every year. When I first came in the league and I was playing for Joe Gibbs, man, we had dudes hidden in the ceiling tiles. I played with Big Ray Brown. I don't know if you remember Big Ray Brown.
Oh, Big Ray Brown, an unbelievable guard. He played for like 20 years, Buffalo, 20 Washington, years. Unbelievable player.
San Francisco for a long time. Big Ray Brown came in the league in 1987. Big Ray Brown never got into a game until 1992. So he came in with the Cardinals. He came over to the Redskins in 89. So he was 87 and 88 with the Cardinals, 89, 90, 91, 92 was the first year that Big Ray Brown got into a game. Then he became a starter the next year. And then he ended up playing forever. For 20 years, starting the last, I guess, 13, 14 years of his career, but he played for 20 years. And we used to keep guys on our roster all the time. I mean, it was like there were dudes all over the place and they were veteran guys because you used to pay them a little bit more money knowing that, hey, Russ Grimm can't start 16 games anymore. His body is broken. It will break down. But man, if we need him to come in for three grand games, he'll dispense justice for three games until our guy gets healthy. And we had a bunch of dudes like that. And now the league has created the situation where they pay the big time players a bunch of money. And then they have a bunch of guys who aren't talented enough, aren't good enough, aren't don't make any money. I mean, think about it. You're like offensive line wise, dude, you keep a bunch of young players that can't play on your offensive. You have one or two injuries, man. And now all of a sudden you got $100 million quarterback and you're putting them in harm's way. It's so out of whack. And it really, for me, it really started when we agreed, because again, like you said, young guys weren't represented. We're agreeing to a rookie wage scale for guys coming in that have no ability to negotiate.
They can't sit there and be like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah. And we're going, we'll negotiate on their behalf and we're going to screw them. All right, good. You know, I mean, and again, like you said, everybody who's there is an upper echelon player that's played for a long time. I just don't think it was thought out very well at all from our union, but you know, that's pretty typical.
Pretty typical. The great Mark Schlett joins us here on episode 110 of McChesney Unchained on DNVR. And we roll into the Denver Broncos talking about development and young players. Denver's full of developing young players. And on paper, they look real good, man. I like the defense and the experience. I like the young offense. I like Bowles being an all-pro. I think Reiser should get locked down. I like Cush. I think the right guard spot is open for competition. I think that they should really look at how much money they're paying Glasgow. He's good, but he's not very consistent. I think the right tackle, if Penei Sewell's there at 9, I'd like to draft him, but that's just the lineman in me. It all comes back full circle to 3. And I've listened to a lot of your opinions on Drew Lock, and I agree with a lot of it. And I wanted to ask you this. Pat Schumer and the express that he's been on, being damn near a coach on every team. I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I'm saying the scheme and the 3-wide, 4-wide stuff and trading in Janovich and not committing to smash mouth football to support your quarterback is not the proper way to do things, in my opinion. How in the hell are they going to go and be a playoff contender in the AFC West of all divisions if they don't have an offseason and Drew Lock's not there? I mean, Peyton Manning's not his coach. He can help him as much as he wants. But, I mean, I can sit around and be like, hey, I've had stink in the gym a couple of times. He's helped me learn some you know, counters and how to, you know, stop Warren Sapp's, you know, reverse backhand move and all that shit. But it was like twice. And you know, and that's my point is, I think a lot of this is posturing, and how in the hell are they actually going to sell this bill of goods to us again?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Like I'm a big believer in having an identity. And I think every team has to have an identity, and players need to know what that identity is. It needs to be preached. It needs to be worked upon. And I can ask anybody who covers the Broncos on a regular basis, yourself, me, anybody, what is the Broncos offensive identity? And nobody can tell me what it is. I think there are a lot of coaches in this league who call plays but don't call an offense. And there's a big difference, right?
Yeah.
You call plays for the sake of calling plays. And sometimes you're going to have an explosion because every play you call works. But the good coaches call plays or call an offense. So they call a play to set up something three plays down the road, and they're thinking about it, or to set up something in the quarter to create an explosive. And I asked a guy who plays for the Niners about Kyle Shanahan and what sets him apart as a play caller. And the guy told me, listen, he'll tell us on Wednesday what he's going to call, why he's going to call it, why he needs buy-in from us, and what the result is going to be if we buy in. And he will say, I am going to call this play in this particular game six times. And this play is not worth a squirt of piss. We're going to average 2 yards a carry. But we've got four explosives in the passing game we're going to get off of this play, off the play action, the adjunct play action to this. Yep. And listen, Kittle, if you block it, I'm going to get you one. And Emmanuel Sanders, if you block it, I'm going to get you one. And Ayuk, if you block it, I'm going to get you one. And if you sell out, you check, and you block it, I'm going to get you an explosive. And at the end of the day, every one of you guys is going to compile statistics, and we're going to beat the shit out of this team.
Yep.
And everybody goes, and they did, I'm man. In.
They were crushed.
And I have seen it with Mike Shanahan. I have lived it. This is what we're going to get. Let me tell you what's going to happen before it happens. We're going to line up in this. We've run this, you know, we've run 19 handoff four, six times, and we're going to line up in this. And this is the way they're going to play it. They're going to rotate the safeties down weak, you know, and, you know, expecting the cutback, and we're going to hit them with this play, and it's going to be a 70-yard touchdown. And I'm telling you what, as sure as I'm sitting here, bam, it hits third quarter. Touchdown, and all of a sudden we're up 17, and you're like, oh, it's over.
Is that the play action shot in the second Super Bowl to Rod?
Yeah, that was a play action shot where Mike, as a matter of fact, you could hear him on the sideline go, oh, we got it. We got the look.
We got the look. Yeah.
Yeah. That was off of, I think that was off of a fake 18 handoff or play pass 18 handoff. So yeah, it is the way that the great play callers call an offense as opposed to calling plays. And I see it in this league. I see it in this league a ton. I talk to a lot of head coaches. I've got some guys who have really become good friends. And it's fascinating to have conversations with the guys who are really good at it and then have conversations with the guys that are trying to figure it out.
So is Pat Schumer and I don't even know who the quarterback coach is, don't care. Is Pat Schumer responsible for Drew Lock's development right now, or is Drew Lock responsible for Drew Lock's development right now? Because I watch him on tape, and I'm going to use this example. I sit in here in the lab, and I watch the all 22 in the back view, and I'm watching them against Atlanta in Atlanta last year, and I'm watching Atlanta run pirate zone, drop the backside, Don Capers, old school stack blitzes. And we can't pick it up. We're not pointing the right guy. There's no communication between the O-line and the quarterback. The next week, they're in Vegas. I watch the same shit happen. The guy's coming off the corner. He could easily point him and slow things down and use the play clock, but there's no communication between the quarterback and the center. If Drew Lock doesn't know what over Sam stack is and what nickel stack is and three receivers, four defenders, and he can't mic point the most dangerous. If he doesn't know these things, isn't it on Schumer to teach him? And yeah. Where's the disconnect here? Because I'm a meathead D lineman, Mark, and I learned all of it. I mean, I don't think it's really that difficult to do it the right way. And I watch great quarterbacks do it constantly and use the entire play clock. And I don't understand how that process can't be taught to a guy who plays quarterback. I don't get it.
Right. Yeah. I think like not making excuses, but just giving reasons. Here's a kid that for 6 years, he's had six different coordinators, right? Six different languages that you have to learn, six different philosophical approaches to the game. Drew Lock told me flat out, he goes, my years in Missouri, I didn't have to know protections. Everything was seven man protection. And we just threw it deep. I never had a point out of Mike. Missouri was, I mean, it is, you know, it's rudimentary at best.
Yep.
And, you know, you see a game in Carolina where they played really well, but you see a weak side pressure where, you've got two blockers and a free release by your back and you got three rushers and you don't know who the guy's got. You know, they pinch down, they take away the rusher, they leave the most dangerous man or they leave the widest man free. And all you got to do is flip it over to your back and you're out of a negative play. Instead, you take a sack, it fumbles, they return it down to the 1 yard line. And the next thing you know, in a game that should be a runaway, it's a ball game again.
Yep.
Because you don't understand protection. That's on coaches, but a lot of that is on a guy that, like, again, a guy that has never been able to be in the same offense for one solid year. And all these concepts, one stacks upon another, stacks upon another. And, you know, when you're, it's the paralysis by analysis. When you're sitting out there going, okay, what do I got to do? What do I got to do? And you're trying to meld those offenses together. I just think that's a really hard thing. Listen, you can get better. You know, accuracy to me, Matt, is, and I talked to my son about, you know, who was a major league pitcher. I talked to him all the time about throwing mechanics and things of that nature. And I've really become convinced that accuracy is not so much about talent or about, you know, you're just born accurately, some more than others. Accuracy is really about timing, rhythm, and knowing what you're doing, knowing what you see, right? And so if you're late with for instance, if your body gets ahead of your arm as a pitcher, what ends up happening with pitchers, you've seen this too, like you can't stay behind the baseball. You can't stay compact, right? So what ends up happening is you get ahead of the ball. You pull your head, your arm gets long, and now you either do one thing. You're either high and outside or you're pulling it low and in the dirt, right? One of those two things happen. When you're late with the football because you're not quite sure what you're seeing, now what happens? You know inherently that you're late. So jump. All of a sudden you're like, right? Instead of staying behind the ball and just, you know, and just throwing through the ball. Now all of a sudden, you pull your head and you're either high and over the top of your receiver.
Which he is all the time.
Or you're pulling it in the dirt. And so when I watch him mechanically, especially outside the numbers, he's just late all the time. And late all the time creates inaccuracy. It creates bad hip movement, right? You don't stay, you open up your hip, you don't stay closed because you're late. So it makes you automatically open up, flail open. And as soon as you open up, you're inaccurate. Watch him in the middle of the football field because he stays compact and his hips stay closed. He's really accurate usually on like deep crosses or anything in the middle of the football field. If they're just running some type of curl or whatever in the middle, he's really accurate on that stuff. It's outside the numbers. He's usually late, and those things result in bad throws. And that's, you know, that to me is more about understanding and knowing what you're doing than it is physical ability. He's got all the physical ability in the world.
The great Mark Schlereth Thanks so much, brother, for coming on the show. Episode 110 of McChesney Unchained, talking about the Denver Broncos and the strife between the vets and the rookies and the young guys and the offseason and so much more. You can hear Mark on The Fan every single morning, him and Mike Evans down there spitting truth. And then obviously, one of the best play-by-play announcers out there for every one of your games out there on Sundays. So, Mark, thank you so much, brother, for coming on the show and spitting some knowledge and some truth at Unchained Nation. And I will definitely get you down here to the new gym as fast as humanly possible.
I can't wait, man. Always great to catch up, Matt. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Dink.